We are joined today on POTUS by former Senator Richard Lugar. He has joined us before. He is the president of the Lugar Center, which is a nonprofit organization which focuses on a lot of the issues we talk about every single day here. And each year, he and Georgetown University produce something called the annual Bipartisan Index of Members of Congress, Reviving the Lost Art of Bipartisanship. It is an art, not a science, but it is one that is increasingly less exercised, it seems, these days. Senator Lugar joins us to talk about it. He tweets at Dick Lugar. Senator Lugar, welcome. Thanks for being back on POTUS.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be with you again.
It's been a while. So each year you put this out, and I wonder if it's harder and harder to find. I mean, obviously you grade them on a curve. In other words, they're all relative to each other. But it just seems that bipartisanship is a harder commodity to come by these days in Washington.
Well, it is indeed very hard to come by, and this is one reason why the Lugar Center and the McCourt School at Georgetown have attempted to encourage members to introduce bills and gain co-sponsorship from somebody on the other side of the aisle, or correspondingly to reach over to the other side of the aisle and co-sponsor somebody else's bill, because this is more likely to move the legislative process forward. It doesn't negate at all the idealism that any member might have to the right, left, or center, but it simply suggests that the Congress finally must come to conclusions for the benefit of the American people, and this is more likely to occur when there is, in fact, bipartisanship represented by these co-sponsorships.
We should note that this is in the final year of the presidency of Barack Obama, the last year of the previous Congress. So I note that I partly mentioned that because I looked at the top 12, and two members of the Senate are gone who were on the list. Number six was Mark Kirk of Illinois. Number 12 was Kelly Ayotte. They were undone in the 2016 election.
That's correct.
And I'm not sure if it was for being bipartisan. It probably not. But
well, I hope not. But in any event, your observation is an important one.
So number one on the list was Susan Collins, followed by Joe Donnelly, a Republican and a Democrat. What exactly did they do, if anything in particular, to earn that honor as the most, the highest scoring in terms of bipartisanship?
Well, both have been very active in attempting to solve problems through the introduction of legislation. In other words, they have not been passive observers, simply coming in to vote when roll calls were called, but they've actively promoted legislation that they felt was very important. But beyond that, they have reached out to find others on the other side of the aisle who would co-sponsor their legislation. Or correspondingly, they have been on the lookout for other bills that they would co-sponsor that were from the other side of the aisle. In other words, it shows the degree of activity, both in terms of legislative output as well as activity to get something done, that is, to move it along.
Senator Lugar, you're an observer of politics as well as obviously policy, and I note that in this top 10, we see both Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Senator Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia. He is a D, she's an R. He's up for re-election in 2018. I wonder, there's something different about West Virginia where you have a Democrat and a Republican, but yet is a state that has gone increasingly red over the years. Give us a sense of what it takes to be a successful senator from that state, if you would.
Apparently, a great sensitivity to constituents to begin with, and both are very excellent and veteran politicians. Likewise, they both have been active. I can remember being with Joe Manchin at the time that he was governor of the state, had really broad ideas and did a great job during that period of time. But it's a state that is literally up for grabs, so to speak, when it comes to elections in Congress or for the presidency.
Again, Senator Richard Lugar, former senator with us for the annual Bipartisan Index of Members of Congress. I noted, and I want to do one more on the Senate and then move to the House, because Senator Ted Cruz is at the bottom of the list next to the last, and Senator Bernie Sanders is last on the list. And I look at those two in part because they both ran for president, but also because they have very enthusiastic crowds. And it seems to me that those very enthusiastic crowds sometimes feed on the very partisanship that puts them at the bottom of this list. In other words, being very successful or, you know, maybe an effective campaigner does not necessarily translate into being that same kind of a legislator. Maybe you'd talk about the challenges of getting elected as opposed to actually legislating and governing.
Well, both Senator Cruz and Senator Sanders have been very active throughout 2016 in the presidential campaign, as candidates, for that matter. They were looking really for other objectives, namely, they were attempting to bring together, to begin with, a part of their parties, respectively, with Cruz, the very far right of the Republican Party, with Sanders, the very far left of the Democratic Party, to be a foundation, at least, of delegates to begin with, upon which they would hope to build and move, at least to get a majority. Their preoccupation was with that, with party building, candidate building for presidency, as opposed to the legislative efforts that their roles as senators called for. Not that they were failing to be present for most of the votes, but at the same time, it was not a preoccupation, at least in my judgment. They were offering legislation every day that had been thought out carefully, been carefully drafted, that might actually become law of the land. They rather were there to make partisan statements and to galvanize the troops.
Senator Lugar, on the House side, it's funny. I look at the top five, and we got four New Yorkers, all Republicans. We've got Senator Representative Peter King, Richard Hanna, Chris Gibson, and I'm sorry, three New Yorkers in that top five. But I noticed of those three, the Republicans in New York, it almost reminds me of the days when they used to have something called the sort of liberal Republicans, going back to the days of Jacob Javits and people like that. Are they liberal Republicans, or is it just that they have to do different things or is the curve a little bit different maybe in the House because of the majority rule in the House?
I don't know about the majority rule of the House idea, but the fact is that New Yorkers, by and large, tend to be more centrist, probably slightly to the left of center frequently, and they're cognizant of a very diverse constituency, so it's not totally surprising that these New Yorkers would be head of the list for the Congress as a whole.
I would also, if you wouldn't mind, just for a moment, tap into some of your experience and your knowledge. For those who don't know, Senator Lugar was for a long time on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, considered one of the leaders in areas like nuclear proliferation, the treaties that were drawn up, somebody who was intimately a part of all of these developing issues that the United States had faced. And Senator Lugar, I wanted to see if maybe in a broad way you could frame the dilemma we find ourselves in now with North Korea. We've got this great concern over nuclear weaponry. There is another hearing, yet another hearing today in the Senate about this. And this is not a new issue. North Korea's sort of, truculence, their chest beating is not a new thing, but it seems to have taken on a new urgency now. And I wonder if maybe you had some thoughts about that.
Well, my thoughts come down to the fact that when I served on the Foreign Relations Committee and then moved up to become the ranking Republican member and finally the chairman, I had worked alongside of Joe Biden when he was chairman and I was ranking member, and John Kerry, likewise, when he was chairman and I was ranking member. And we came to the conclusion that America takes a look at the vote in the Foreign Relations Committee, and the vote had best not be 10 to 9. At best, it ought to be 19 to 0. In other words, it's incumbent upon the chairman and the ranking member of that committee, after many hearings, much study, and so forth, and travel maybe to the countries involved, to come up with something that is as close to unanimity as the Senate's approached. Because if it's a treaty, the Senate's going to require a two-thirds majority. Even if it's not a treaty, foreign policy decisions frequently are very, very tough to pass in the Senate, and it's very important that there be leadership that is bipartisan in the very same sense that we have this Lugar Center situation. If America is to have a following of people who understand that we are on track, and we've given study to it, that both parties together are looking at for us as opposed to others around the world.
So I wonder, given that experience, I mean, do you consider ourselves, this country right now, at a key moment, at one of those inflection points, as they often call it, with North Korea?
Yes, and I would be very hopeful that in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to take that focus again. that Senator Corker and Senator Cardin, the ranking member, would pull together their members so that they all understand as best as possible what the situation is. Now, the criticism, as I understand it, of the briefing given to 100 senators yesterday at the White House was that everybody understood the gravity of it, but that they did not appear to be coming from the White House, from the president or his folks, the strategies that are going to be required, the alternatives that are there. In other words, in addition to being bipartisan in the Senate, when it's a commander-in-chief situation, a possible conflict, there needs to be very good strategic thinking on the part of the administration shared with the leadership and then the membership of the committees that are relevant and finally the Congress as a whole. Now, I think that's the very important part now. What is our strategy with regard to North Korea or, for that matter, Syria or, for that matter, Afghanistan? Each of these places where American troops might be involved are already involved, at least in the case of Afghanistan.
I should note, by the way, the two men you mentioned, Senator Bob Corker, who is the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, is number 18 on your list, and Senator Cardin is number 42 on the list. So not overtly partisan, but Senator Corker is a little bit higher on the list, I guess, in terms of bipartisanship on the list that you've drawn up. Obviously, this is a key issue for Americans and one we have to keep watching. For people who want to look for this, I guess they can go to thelugercenter.org and find this list if they would like it. Is that correct?
That's correct. And you can print it all out and look at all the details we've been discussing.
All right. Senator Lugar, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on POTUS today.
Thank you very much. It's my honor.
That is former Senator Richard Lugar, a Republican from Indiana, who, by the way, is now the president of the Lugar Center, which is a nonprofit organization. They do a lot of things on food security, weapons of mass destruction, nonproliferation. We were just discussing that. He's also a professor of practice and distinguished scholar at the School of Global and International Studies at Indiana University, a faculty member in the Department of History and Political Science, and the Richard G. Lugar Symposium for Tomorrow's Leaders at the University of Indianapolis. As I said, this is an annual report that they put out, he and Georgetown University, the Bipartisan Index of Members of Congress. Check it out at the website, which is thelugercenter.org, and his name is L-U-G-A-R, and that's where he tweets, as a matter of fact, at Dick Lugar, at Dick L-U-G-A-R.